There you go. Hey guys, my name's Matt. I work for a company called Expanse. I'm head of product development there, so thanks for coming. It's my first time speaking at TechEd, so go easy on me. Basically today, Windows Azure Acid Test. It's a bit of a cryptic title, but basically it's about pushing Azure to its paces, high performance WCF, and various other things associated with large scalable applications. So it's just as a first starter, just people actually have a deployment production ready in Azure, just a show of hands, just so I can. There's a few, okay. And more than 10 instances on those production instances? Anyone? No? Okay, so some fairly big ones, but not many. Out of the whole room, we've got three. Okay, so I guess that's part of it as well, that I wanted to make this more of a conversational type exercise, so feel free to ask questions. So the topics that we're going to include are load testing in Windows Azure and the various benefits that it brings. So some people may not have thought of different ways they can use Windows Azure rather than just, an application running in the cloud. You can use it for testing or load testing or various other things. So I wanted to discuss horizontal scalability and stateful computing, which sometimes gets people going, all right, stateful computing in Azure, okay. And high-performance WCF. So they're the three topics, basically, that I wanted to cover. The intended audience, as I say, is enterprise architects, developers, and people who love Azure. So I don't know how many of those there are actually out there on the planet, but I'm sure there are somewhere. So. The agenda overview, so basically what we're going to cover is this, what is Azure? I'm sure most of you already know that already, but I've got a few different takes on things. The goals of a load test, so what I intend to achieve by executing our load test in Azure. I'm going to describe the setup, the architecture that I used, the costs associated with that architecture, and then basically go through the results. So the presentation is really it's a journey, yeah? So I was told to, we basically wanted to test our platform and how it would test under load. So 10,000 concurrent users was what we were going for. And about 200,000 plus transactions a minute. So we set that benchmark for us and we said, okay, well that's going to be our goal. So what are we going to do that in? We decided, Azure is a fairly good, system that we might actually do that in. So what this presentation will be is that journey on me actually getting to my point of 200,000 plus transactions a minute and 10,000 concurrent users. I'm going to show you guys some of the things that I had to go through to actually get that to happen. And hopefully you guys can take that away in your careers and your jobs and actually use that information. Because what I found was it's actually information that's very hard to come by. Things like, obscure WCF settings that need to be done and channel factories and channel factory factories and singletons and all this sort of stuff. So hopefully we'll actually go through that information and you guys can take it away with you. So, so what is Azure, I guess? Well, that's one of them. So it's a large data center, really. There's a train over here. It's quite a long train. There's two football fields. So as you can see, it's a pretty big data center. And you can't get these sort of economies of scales at most companies that you guys work for. So you're basically leveraging Microsoft platform as a service infrastructure, and you get a very good, cost return on that. So. I was quite impressed by that picture and the size of it. So that's the train there. So, anyway, the next step would be, what is SQL Azure? So I put this picture up here to show that it's SQL Azure is not just a database on a cluster somewhere or a database on an instance somewhere. It's actually a full-blown, fully distributed SQL Server implementation. It's fully fault redundant. It's highly scalable. And there's a lot going on in there. You sort of think, there's a lot happening in this infrastructure. Am I going to be throttled? Are my response times going to be okay? With all this clustering and load balancing and failover and fault tolerance, what's the trade-off for that? Am I going to be sub 100 millisecond, sub 200, sub 20? So I guess really, I look at this architecture and I go, well, have the Microsoft guys done it right? what am I going to get there? I was a bit dubious going into it, but as you'll see, it actually gets quite good. So as I said, the testing goals were to get 10,000 concurrent stateful users onto a application server running in Azure. So we set that as our benchmark. At Expanse, we basically do line of business application development, and we think that there aren't too many line of business apps out there that do 10,000 concurrent, so we set that as our benchmark. Then we needed a way to prove that. So we wanted to say, okay, well, we can actually prove that we can run 10,000 concurrent users, and what's the architecture? And, we also wanted an environment to tweak the performance settings. So there aren't, like in companies I've worked for in the past, there hasn't been, you usually get a little test server over in some obscure subnet somewhere, and they say, well, you can have that to test and load test, and the production ready stuff is, you know, it's full blown, it's on a, you know, high performance network, but the test stuff generally, you know, out again, that's right. I think it comes in and out, so. You don't get the same sort of quality, so you can't actually load stuff up, you know, to a point where you actually 100% know that my application is going to perform under load. So we wanted an environment that would allow us to tweak the settings when we were running it at high loads. So once you get past, you know, 200, 300, 400 requests per second on an ASP.NET or an IIS box, then you start to really run into issues. And you really need to start worrying about throttling. Like, you've got 16 concurrent users as a default setting in WCF. All these sorts of things that you sort of, you don't become aware of when you really start ramping things up. So Azure to us, like, we're a small company, and Azure seemed like a pretty logical way for us to actually get that for a small cost. We also wanted to work out cost per user and the scalability metrics. So we wanted to sort of, like, our application or our, you know, our platform scales at this point. Like, every time we need to add another user, it's going to cost us X. Or, you know, if you want 5,000 users, you're going to need X number of instances. And we can actually qualify that or quantify that with a cost in Azure. And I was wanted to assess how... Oh, I've got a screen here. Sorry, it's my first one. We wanted to assess how the Azure platform performs under load as well. So, and as I said, I was dubious with some of the things that were going on there. So we actually wanted to see how it went. And also the SQL Server, how that performed under load. And you'll see some of the goals that I put in there and some of the benchmarks. So this was our application architecture. So we've got a load balancer. Windows Azure by default always has a load balancer. And then you have your web roles and you have your worker roles. So the web roles are always, you should typically make a web role pretty much always stateless, yeah? So a lot of the time when you're developing applications, yeah, you might get access to state, but once you come behind a load balancer, a lot of things change, yeah? So you don't get server affinity. You can't be guaranteed you're going to switch onto the same server all the time. Things like HTTP keep-alives can't be read. You know, there's various WCF settings that you need to actually turn on, turn off to really allow you to, you know, perform this under load. So we've got a web service tier. So this is our actual load testing setup. We started with 10 instances on the stateless web service. And then we basically moved down to an application server or a middle tier architecture. Now, our middle tier architecture consists of what's called worker roles. You can they're close to Windows services, yeah? So you might have a Windows service on a box in your middle tier, and this is basically what happened. And we had a service that would actually manage these middle tier application servers. We called that our site manager. So from the application servers would then talk to our database, and that was a SQL Azure cluster. So as you can see, there's quite a lot going on here from load balancer through to web service, through to our site manager, and then through to our app server, through to our database, and then all the way back up again. So this is the architecture that we came up with. And we wanted to one-click deploy this into Azure and have it all run for us. So, and that's possible with the current Azure framework. So this was our load testing architecture. So we needed to set up an architecture where we could say, all right, let's fire some load at this thing. So we put load testing, 5 load testers in each of the regions, Central USA, South Asia, Europe, and Central Asia. And we fired them at the application. We coordinated those all through a central load testing manager server. So we basically fired off a list of transactions and said, okay, you guys start off here and start executing payloads against our banking application. So this was our scenario. So four distinct load testing environments. All the load testing environments are scalable, so we could scale those out to 5, 10, 15, 20. We could probably throw 15, 20,000 concurrent users, but you know, with the architecture, we've gone for 10. So this was our setup. Now we got all of that. We got all of that, all those servers, all the Azure table storage, all of the app servers, all the database. We got all of that, so for $15.71 per hour, which, you know, it's pretty impressive, yeah? So we ran the load test for half an hour at peak load. We ran it for over an hour, but at peak load for half an hour. And we were able to do that for $15.71 per hour. The costs associated with this, as you can see, I've got some metrics up there. You've got your standard Azure metrics. And then our load testing setup costs down there. I should be running them out probably. So we've got our load testing setup costs here. Now, typically, most people, you get a standard number of database connections. You get about 5 gigabytes. Once you move past 5 gigabytes, you actually start paying for incremental usage on the database. So the database transactions would be the only bit that's a little bit vague there, but if you try and keep your payload under 5 gig in the load test, you won't pay for anything. So that cost is almost pretty much guaranteed, $15.71 per hour. So I don't know if anyone agrees, but that to me was pretty palatable. It's going to cost us at least, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 to set up some load testing environment that's even remotely close to what you can get in Azure for that sort of cost. So as I said, this is going to be a journey. So these are the things that I had. So I started off, this is my architecture, and this is what I wanted to do. So first off was, you know, how am I going to locally test this stuff? Because I created my own load tester, right? So we have a platform. So it was basically we could run this architecture in our platform and allow people who would develop it to actually, you know, load test their application. So it was worth it to create our own load tester. But you can actually use something like LoadRunner to do a very similar thing. So we needed to test the application in the load tester. So, you know, that's all my instances running up in local debug. Which is, you know, pretty cool. It's one of the best things about Windows Azure, I personally think, that the local debug environment is so similar to what it is in the actual real environment. None of the other cloud providers can give you that flexibility. Microsoft's always had really good tooling support, and they go again with the local debug environment. I found it pretty faultless. One of the biggest problems is you can't... So when you start really scaling things up, you have to run local debug on a local machine. That's what they say anyway, but there's ways around that. So once you start, you know, moving into 20 instances, you start running out of memory very quickly, yeah? So you need we needed a way to remote debug that, yeah? So put it on a server, connect to the local instance, like a VM or something, and then start remote debugging. So just as a quick tip for you guys out there, you know, you can use what's called port forwarding. So it'll only listen on 127.0.0.1, so if you port forward from your local machine all the requests to the local instance, then you'll actually be able to, you know, debug remotely. And you just install something like PuTTY or Bitwise and then do a port forward for that. So that took me a while to figure that out. Azure said basically, no, you can't do any remote debugging, but you can actually do it. You can obviously do all the things like IntelliSense, IntelliTrace through the Azure Fabric, but with 25-minute deployments, half an hour deployment sometimes to get what you just fixed in code and then put it up into Azure, it does become a bit tedious. So you need a way of being able to quickly, rapidly iterate on that. So these are the sorts of things you can do. So this was our very simple banking application. So we needed an application that we could test our system on. So we had a very, very simple banking. We had transactions table. We had an accounts table, which is an accounts table. We had a users table and a billing address book and some billers. So this was a very, you know, very simple database. Well, this is a model-driven architecture. So I'll just quickly move over that slide. Our database setup, as you can see, we put 4 million records in the transactions table. We put 20,000 billers, so we gave everyone, you know, two billers and two accounts. So we had a fairly reasonable size database there. Now we indexed the database. We didn't put too many indexes, only put four indexes on there. So as I said, we wanted to actually simulate real load in a real environment. So you want to, there's a couple of things with the database setup. You want to make sure that the database resides at the same location as your application instance generally, otherwise latency will be just huge, about a second. You know, you can connect to other geographic locations, but as I said, the latency is just too much. You know, it can be in the vicinity of 1 second for each transaction, which is just way too much. So that sort of, once I deployed it and I had it existing in Asia somewhere and I had the application server in central US and I was getting, you know, very poor response times, that was, you know, that was the reason. Connection pooling, that's another thing that can get you. You can get a lot of connection dropouts. So connection pooling should basically be turned off. You should try and manage your own connections in some high-performance applications. There's a load balancer and a guarantee affinity, and you can get some connection dropouts. Once you start reaching things like, I think it's about 2,000-3,000 connections, you start getting some latency, start to get dropouts. So if you can try and manage those connections and your connection pooling somehow, then you can actually get a more high-performance app. So I'm talking in high performance, very, you know, large transactions. We're talking, you know, 100,000 transactions a minute here. You start to get these sort of bottlenecks that feed in. So you need to start considering stuff like connection pooling and stuff like that. What's that? I'm sure you can. Why would they have connection pooling off? No. He says it's a licensing agreement that you can't turn connection pooling off, but no, I think if you connect with a single CAL license, it's a single user, so that's always of the same authentication. So the connection pool always exists under the connection you just made. Typically in high-performance applications, you wouldn't generally have multiple CALs on the server, on the database server. You'd usually have a single CAL or an authenticated user. I don't know about that. So I'll just go back to this slide now. It's quite busy, but what we wanted to suggest was when you're load testing, you need a process. You need to record a process. And those processes, they manipulate part of your business or part of your application's business logic. So you want to say, okay, well, let's pull out of our application 4, 5, whatever you want to call arbitrary number, processes that we want to define within our load testing to say, okay, well, this encapsulates a good portion of our application. We want to load test these processes. So you come up with those process flows. And so we picked 5 processes out of my banking app. I've said display transactions, transfer money, pay new biller, pay existing biller, and update user details. These are my 5 processes that I want to actually try and fill the server, or fill the application with load. And I was going to divvy those up by a percentage that I deemed as part of a natural application progression. So I'm going to show those. So each of these steps would obviously have more detail around them. So I'll just go through transfer money. We have things like check from account is selected, check the to account is entered, check the description's entered, the from description, you know, check that the user actually was in their daily limit, check to have enough money, the withdraw money from account, all the typical business process type stuff. So actually run these on the load test. I'll show you that in a minute. So as I said, this is what have we got here. So I'm going to go in here. So one of the things that we had was the ability to actually capture the request responses. So as I go back to that architecture, we weren't too concerned about the latency between the client and the web service. What we wanted to primarily test was the latency between the web service, what we call execution time. So the latency between the web service all the way into the application to the database and back again. Latency is a bit of a funny thing. You know, you can never be guaranteed what you're going to get, so we sort of tried to keep that out of the equation. So we really wanted to test basically the application. So one of the things was, how am I going to capture all these transactions? How am I going to, you know, I'm getting millions of these transactions all the time. Where am I going to put them? How am I going to capture them and still not infect the web service and still not be able to, you know, degrade the performance of the web service by capturing this traffic. So I could have done tracing and various other things, but we decided to shift it down into what's called a logging service. So some of the things, once you start getting into real load, is if you just to execute that, to say, okay, well, let's just shift that off to our logging service quickly, asynchronously, there's still going to take a thread to do that. So if we shift that request off asynchronously off and say, okay, you go away and do that, and that's a quick sort of, you know, very, very quick, it's still going to need a thread. And a lot of the times you'll use the thread pool, the native thread pool that's actually operates under, you know, IIS. So you can quickly build that up. If you execute maybe 100, 200 asynchronous threads, you can quickly build up that thread pool, and then you start getting degradation in performance. So you either want to make a decision to either lift the thread pool or actually stay out of it altogether if you're doing things like logging and this sort of capture response stuff. One of the great tools that comes with you know, SQL Azure, with Windows Azure, is table storage. So the table storage stuff, for you guys that don't know, is it's a NoSQL implementation done by Microsoft. It's actually pretty good. It's high performance. It has an Atom-based API that you can get the data back from. And there are various tools that interface with it. I'll show you some of those in a few minutes. But it's pretty high performance, and it runs really well. And you can just hook straight into that, and you get that out of the box with Azure. I don't think there are, I'm just thinking of the other competitors, they don't really have the same sort of implementation. You can do it yourself, but something as a service is, you know, is pretty good. So we logged out, yeah.
Did you go with the managing the threads yourself just to lower the cost instead of going, for example, via queues?
We wanted to keep out of all that sort of stuff, out of the queues, and typically, from my perception, if you start going into queues and you start getting into the service bus stuff, the costs then start to go out of control, yeah? So once you start hitting the enterprise service or the ESB or the service bus, I've forgotten what the Azure term is, but you actually have these costs associated per transaction. It's really hard to work out what that's going to be. So we made a conscious decision to try and stay out of that area. Now, Microsoft have said they're going to actually try and improve that, the billing side of things, but you could rapidly go out of control if you start getting into queuing and start. So if you can try and keep out of that. So we just, you know, basically created more threads. And if we needed more instances, we'd go for more instances. It's actually a cheaper and a better way of us actually working out the cost. So that was sort of our decision, yeah. So where are we at? So SQL Azure table storage. Couple of issues. You need to batch the requests. If you don't batch the requests to SQL Azure table storage, you can actually get quite a lot of latency or quite a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of time to actually batch the request up and send it. I think it's about 10 milliseconds. So you're trying to try to batch them in lots of 10 and 50, between 10 and 50. It doesn't get any better. The linear graph basically curves off at about between 20 and 50 transactions batched off. And yeah, so that's one of the things. Thread.start instead of the thread.queue user work item. So the thread pool.queue user work item will actually, it'll consume. So then your web service can no longer, you know, have threads to actually consume the service that it's actually asking for. Datetime.now, if you do a datetime.now and put it in a variable and then do some work and then another datetime.now, it's only accurate to about 15 milliseconds. So if you're trying to work this stuff out and you're trying to get really accurate performance data, don't use datetime.now. Use a stopwatch class, because stopwatch class is much more accurate. So that was something. I was always getting 15 milliseconds for everything. And it was 0 or 15 milliseconds. It was like, I don't know why I'm getting 0 response times. But the reason was because datetime.now, the start time and the end time were exactly the same because there was no difference. Yeah, so that was one of the little gotchas I had. Windows Azure has some really cool logging and diagnostic capabilities. Straight out of the box, you can just... You go in there. This is the code, if you can see that. But it's really simple. This slide deck is available online. It's basically just creating I think there's a static class there called Diagnostic Monitor Configuration. And you just start the Diagnostic Monitor. You feed into it some counters. So the counter names up there, they look exactly the same as the counters that you typically have in Performance Monitor, and they do operate exactly the same. Now, the logging and diagnostics, turn that on and it logs every single diagnostic for how much you've configured, be it 5 minutes, be it 5 seconds, be it whatever, for every single instance you have. So every one of those instances that I had then, we actually have live performance data coming through that I can actually look at and go, you know, what is this service doing? I was going to do the demo later, but I actually switched that now. I've actually got a load test running now. It's doing 1,000 concurrent users. I just wanted to show you guys just some code quickly. So this is a tool. This is a tool by Cerebrata. Cerebrata, they hook into the table storage element of the Diagnostic Studio, and they allow you to actually capture real-time statistics. I'm just going to do this. Where am I? Total processor. I guess that's a good one. Okay. So what we got here is total processor. So as you can see there, I've got all my web servers at the top. I'll do a mouse. I've got all my web servers here. I've got all my my session managers or my app servers, and I've got my site manager. And I can turn all those off if I want. I can basically, okay, what are my web servers doing? You know, how are they performing? So I can see I'm getting 20% CPU utilization, or probably, I've got average statistics up here. Average for that's about 5.9. So they're not working very hard. They're doing 1,000 concurrent. There's 5 instances currently running. I can show you that quickly. So this is our, the screen's very small. This is our current Azure implementation. So this is what we're currently running. We've got 5 web service instances, and we've got 4 app servers and a site manager. So, and this is the statistics we're getting back from that. So we're currently, this will update every 5 minutes and show me this. So I can rapidly sort of work out how I'm performing, where I need to adjust my instance counts and all that sort of stuff. So that some of the other statistics that I actually put in there were, what have I got? Request per second. So request per second, so we're roughly running at about 40 requests per second on each instance, which isn't very much. I was getting about 400 requests per second. So timesing that by 10, getting about 400. I was peaking at about 400 requests per second. Now, it seems as though an Azure instance will peak at about 400 requests per second. Now, I have no idea what that is, but it looks like that's about the threshold. Azure large instance is about 400. It doesn't matter, actually. Maven extra large, a huge, whatever it is, peaks at about 400 requests per second. So that seems to be... I've asked the guys in Redmond to possibly come up with an explanation. Their explanation was we fire 5,000 requests per second at it. And then I asked them, well, did you have any latency behind that execution? Was it just, you know, return true? You know, you can iterate quickly. You know, you can have those 5,000 requests. They don't actually operate. They might have, you know, the execution might have been 5,000 requests. You know, but if you put some latency in there, you're actually going to start hitting some 400 millisecond bottlenecks. So there are our requests per second. So the Cerebrata tool, I think you can do it in SCOM as well, like Systems Operation Manager now has a hook into table storage. So I'll just quickly show you. Sorry, I should add this up already. So there's the other tool this guy does is the table storage. So here's your tables. So we have our performance, our WAD performance counter table. And loading. Okay, so all it does is if you have a look over here, it shows you the counter name on the right-hand side there and the counter value. And it shows you the instance, the role instance, and various other attributes. So you can easily sort of see how you could create a pretty nice application, like a nice Silverlight application that just hooks straight into this table storage implementation and can possibly give you some nice gauges and various other things. So you could really get some nice applications that come out. But the Cerebrata tool is a good step forward, and I like the implementation. Okay, so load test results, first cut. So what did I get? I did 5 large web services, 1 large site manager, 5 large session managers, and then 4 geographic locations. So I ran it for 32 minutes. I did 1.89 million transactions, which was an average of, 60,000 odd transactions. I got 70 millisecond response times, which I believe is pretty good. Sub 100 milliseconds, that's what we were sort of aiming for. But my average CPU utilization was about 30%. So there was, something wrong there. So it wasn't enough. So we wanted to try more. So at this stage, it was an investigation as to why, primarily why am I only getting 30% response times? Being as hard as I can possibly do it. So somewhere along the line, something was saying, well, you're only allowed this much through this gate. So that was an investigation. So step one, WCF web services, I'm pretty sure a lot of people know this, but they're not threaded. They're not multi-threaded by default. They are per call by default, but they're not multi-threaded. So per call generally gives you a degree of multi-threading, but it's typically not multi-threaded by default. If you want to create a singleton or some sort of per session or per service, then you basically need to actually create it as multi-threaded. There's a whole heap of throttling services. So service throttling, you've got max concurrent sessions, max concurrent instances, and max concurrent calls. So the current instances, so that doesn't mean a whole lot if you're a singleton. Max concurrent calls, you want to leave these settings, you don't just want to bump them up to 10,000, where you'll start to get a DOS type arrangement. If you just go, I just want 10,000 concurrent, then you will, because the Azure load balancer doesn't actually do DOS detection. It's not stateful. So you'd have to do a degree of what's called stateful packet inspection, and they say they don't do that. So they actually push it back to the application developer to say, well, you need to manage your DOS, how your DOS attacks work and all that sort of, or potentially how the DOS attacks could happen. And they say, but you do that through the throttling controls that we provided in either WCF services or some of the other stuff through IIS. Another thing was, I don't know if you guys have used channel factories, but it's a way of creating a proxy. It's a way of creating a proxy to a service, So typically you can add a service reference and do all that sort of stuff. But under the covers, you're typically using channel factories to do that. And when you create those on the fly, so if I've got a channel factory and I want to open it to connect to another service, there's only 10 concurrent connections ever at any one time available to you. So if you do I'll explain that in a minute, but we'll explain the singleton to singleton service, or what's called service hopping, and I'll do that. I'll explain that in the next couple of slides. But what I found was we were being limited by the maximum number of open connections that we could have at any one time. Hence the reason I'm only getting 30% CPU utilization, because it's actually saying no and then rejecting you. All my connections are now starved. So another thing is the TCP, the connection management attribute. You want to adjust the maximum concurrent connections. So if you're thinking of doing more than, I think it's 16 concurrent connections at any one time, you need to start adjusting that figure. Otherwise, you're going to get server timeouts.
Mm-hmm. They make a recommendation for 12 times the number of CPU calls.
They do,
And I guess in this instance,
it's
okay to kind of deviate from that?
Well, I haven't noticed. Yeah, I guess it's all about how you do it. You tweak the setting, and you have a look. They make a recommendation, but how many people are actually going to do proactively go and monitor what their application is through load testing? And then it's the typical Microsoft prescriptive way that they do things. We'll default everything. And then, you wish there was some sort of turbo boost button or something. It's like Jeremy Clarkson went into this car and he's setting all these, sets like 9 buttons to get the thing to work, how he wants it to work before he can actually drive it. And it's like WCF, you got to set all these settings before you can actually get the thing to actually perform at a high performance degree. You wish there was some setting that just said, right, turbo mode me or something, I don't know. I know what I'm doing, I'm not a child. So what do we got here? So Azure load balancing is not throttling connections. They have a thing called service point manager dot default connection limit, and that sits inside the web role. And what that does is the same thing as the connection management stuff does. So that'll actually, it's a degree of throttling that you have to look out for. Avoid closing factory connections and stuff in finally blocks. This was a big one for me. So the garbage, if the server's working really hard, a garbage collector will typically, it won't come in and interject if the load is too high. Yeah. So not all the time. You find this in some instances. So if you're closing connections in finally blocks and it's a very high executing method, then it can actually give you some degradation because it's still waiting for the garbage collector to come round and actually finalize that block and actually pull you out of it. And therefore, you've still got an open connection. So whether or not it's good or bad practice, it may be better to do both and have some sort of, if I'm already null or if I'm already closed, and don't worry about closing me. But I did notice that if I was closing connections in finally blocks, the garbage collector would take its time to come back and actually close me out of that block. I know you can use, there's a problem with using blocks with channel factories, and there's some extra code you have to do. But anyway, so I've seen a lot of code where people are closing connections in finally blocks, and once you get into high performance computing, then you actually start to run into trouble. So singleton communications. So this is called service hopping, and it's you know, in Windows Azure they typically run a very stateless based architecture. So if you want to start doing, you know, stateful architectures, then, you know, there's not a whole lot out there for you to do it. And you start to run into all these issues around channel factories and factories and all this sort of stuff. So you run out of connections very quickly. So say if I've got a 1 second delay in service two, and I've got a whole heap of services coming into service one saying, okay, well, give me something in service two, yeah, and return it. Queuing up behind here, yeah? Waiting for a connection to become available if I've only got one channel factory. So, and you've also got a default connection limit of 16. So you rapidly run out of connections, yeah? So the solution is what's called a channel factory. The latest implementation of .NET supposedly has this actually built into it. It's inside the client base class. I don't know why you have to have a channel factory, but it seems the way it is. So what you do is you create maybe 100 channel factories on the fly at the start, and actually gives you 1,000 open connections at any one time. But I guess that actually brings a whole heap of other issues around how do you actually manage those channel factories? You know, how do you do your concurrency around checking that channel factory is actually open? How do you get the best channel factory? So it started off a bit of a journey on how do you create a high-performance channel factory. you sort of wish, you go, why isn't there something out of the box that just does this for me? So some of the things that we came across, using things like parallel link and concurrent collections. Now, I started in my channel factory using things like parallel link. You know, some people love it. It's a horses for courses thing. Parallel link is good for asynchronously executing something that's a long-running task, yeah? So if you've got, say, a collection, call it a million numbers in it, yeah? And you want to iterate over that collection of numbers, you'd think, I thought maybe parallel link would be the way to go, but it's actually not. It's actually quicker to iterate over a standard collection than it is to use parallel link, because once it fires up, it has to create all these delegates and has to create all these various different things. And actually the initialization cost of creating something like parallel link is actually more than actually iterating over the collection. But if you've got a long-running task, then it definitely makes sense. Yeah? So something that's, you know, 100 milliseconds and you want to actually iterate that to find it, then parallel link would actually be a good thing. Concurrent collections, I found it, you know, I think they're still in a beta personally. Have you guys seen the parallel concurrent connections that came out in .NET 4? What it allows you to do is create a collection and allow like a list as a parallel list or a parallel queue, and you set the max number of concurrent connections inside it, and it'll perform all your syncing and your sync locking, and you know, adding something into the collection will do all that for you. In my experience, it didn't work so well. Maybe I got it wrong, but I'm still not sold on the concurrent or the parallel collections and all that sort of stuff at the moment. So once I got all that stuff out of the way, we basically came up with the following. We did 10 large web services, one extra large site manager, and 8 large session managers. So we had, 18, 19 instances. And we got we ran it for about 30 minutes. And as you can see, the number there, which is 39 milliseconds. So that's a pretty good response time, considering within that were things like checking the available balance, going to the database, you know, sometimes 2 and 3 times in one transaction. Some of them were more lightweight transactions, but I believe that anything sub 100 milliseconds in this regard in a, you know, in a cloud-based architecture is pretty solid, yeah? And you guys can get that anytime, I think. So it just shows you that the Azure platform is actually quite a high-performance platform, and they haven't got a lot of fluff in there, and they've actually, it looks like they've actually done quite a good job. So... So this is my my graph of average response times, and they're my transactions as I load up. So as you can see, the response times are fairly consistent, which is great. It's just great news. Now this was the difference in transactions. So this is, I should have had my graphs make some work. This was the difference in the adjustments that I made and the actual increases in performance that were seen. So default WCF settings and 5 instances got me about 55,000 transactions a minute. I did the default WCF settings plus 10 instances and I didn't get a whole lot more. Multi-threaded service and various other attributes changed on the service got me a little bit more. Well, actually got me a little bit less. that's the session context. That's a lot of connection timed out because of the service affinity. It was basically saying, I don't know where that service is anymore. The load balancer actually doesn't hold the server affinity, so you get a lot of session timeouts. Then when I created a channel factory, I almost doubled it. And then raising the TCP connection limit actually brought it up quite a lot. And then another minor adjustment to the instance counts actually got me across the line. So, yeah. That's quite an interesting graph of, you know, some of the solid increases you can get in throughput just by making some adjustments to some of the settings that are already out of the box. So yeah, we've sort of we've done a demonstration of where are we at? Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. So that pretty much brings me to about the conclusion of what I wanted to talk about. At the end of the day, it was more of a discussion on, you know, WCF and Azure. As far as I'm concerned, I got to my goals using the Azure platform. I was able to achieve the required statistics that I wanted, 10,000 concurrent users. We were able to use an enterprise-grade platform that we know specifically the metrics. We can actually drill down now, and I can say, if I've got 10 users, it's going to cost me X number of dollars, and I'm going to actually need to deploy these sort of instances or these sort of... Because Azure gives you the CPU counts. It says, you know, this is a 4 gigahertz processor, this is 5 gigs. So you can actually drill right into that and actually get some real good statistics. And, yeah, it actually achieved what we wanted to do. So thanks. Anyone got any questions? Yep. Uh-huh. It was worthwhile having the data, yeah. I ran it in both ways. So the diagnostics were good for tweaking. So to get my 39 millisecond response times, I actually turned it off. Yes, it does degrade the performance slightly. There is a trace watcher that actually operates on each of the instances that actually is going to consume bandwidth. And it actually consumes bandwidth and it actually consumes it's your CPU as well, yeah. So we actually had a very lightweight statistics counter that actually counted in and just clocked the numbers up, and that allowed us to get the sort of transactions per minute we were looking for. that's sort of how we did it. We had a sort of a, and I am sort of testing this mode, and I am actually going for it mode. So yeah. Anyone else?
Just wanted to check those WCF attribute settings again.
So which one in particular were you after? Yeah. So this can actually go in your app config or your web.config. I think every slide from every TechEd session is online, so you should be able to get. There's also should be a video of this as well. So, and anyone who wants a code or any help through anything, then you know, I'd be happy to help you out. But yeah, anyone else? Yep. Yeah, yeah. They were connection timeouts. Yeah. Sorry, in the slide, have you finished with the settings? I'll just take us back to that. Yeah, I had a 0.014% connection error. I don't know. I still have to investigate those. What I was looking for is a less than 0.5% to 1% error rate, which I was okay with. Now, there could be a number of reasons why things timed out. It could be my load balancer. It could be, you know, the load balancer on the SQL, on the Windows Azure just decided to say, you know, I'm too busy. It could be my instances just saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. The throttling side of things can, rather than just wait, it actually goes, no, I'm too busy, and gives you a really quick, like, less than 1 second timeout. Just says, no, I'm out, I'm done. It won't wait the 30 minute or whatever you've got as you send timeout. I think there's different parameters on your timeouts, your send timeout, your receive timeout, your open timeout. So if your open timeout is set to, say, 1 second, then that'll time out really quickly. And I think that's basically the errors that I was seeing. Most of them were that I got no SQL error, SQL server errors in all 7.8 million transactions. Not a single one, not a single connection error, not a single anything, which is pretty good. I got no .NET errors. It was mostly to do with IIS. The next goal in the load test, the next iteration, I'm possibly going to look at using, say, the net TCP endpoint for WCF. But, you know, that may have its own issues as well, mainly the load balancer. Like, TCP is a, you know, it's a session protocol, so it does have reliable sessions, so I'm not 100% sure what that's actually going to do once you start hitting a load balancer. So we sort of have to work through some of those issues. But it should be pretty easy, so to do .NET TCP connections for really high-performing connections do in Azure. You just front a worker role, and you just turn on an endpoint and say on port whatever 10,000, and you've pretty much any you just create a service host, and you're up and running with a high-performance TCP endpoint. You know, if you own both ends, then it's actually probably a pretty good way to go sometimes.
The
geo testing was more about it was more about the load tester not saying, oh, they've got too many connections from one port here. I'm gonna reject you. So I thought if I spread it over a decent amount of the world, then I might actually be able to fool it, and I might actually go, yeah, okay, right. Because I did start off in one and just had 10 in one, and I was getting some unusual things. So I decided to spread that out, and it actually worked a lot better. It actually looked like a real app then, I think. So. Since I see the Microsoft going. Anyone else? Okay, great. Well, probably, what up? Yeah. Well, it allowed us to tweak the settings, yeah? So that was the biggest thing. So as I said, it's almost impossible for us to get this sort of infrastructure in a lab somewhere, yeah? So we're not a big enough company. We don't have the resources. It would cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to even get close. And we still wouldn't have anything that was a benchmark. Like now I can say, okay, we use Azure. That's our benchmark. That's our container for our application and our infrastructure. You can pretty much go and replicate the same thing if you really want to, if you build the same sort of architecture. You should get the same sort of response times as we did. Rather than us saying, okay, well, we put 20 servers in a room somewhere. They go, what were they, HPs? What kind of SCSI RAIDs were they? Did they have... What sort of, NIC cards did they have? What sort of bandwidth did you have? You know, there's lots of, you know, we didn't want to have to deal with that. So we basically said, we'll go with Azure, and, you know, the rest is sort of... Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, well, definitely. I think it, I know more about QoS through networking, yeah? So quality of service through prioritizing ports, not necessarily about, I personally, I don't know enough about it. Yeah, maybe you can chat afterwards. Is that it? Yep. Pardon me, sorry? Yeah, so how do we access the database? So it was typically an ADO connection, yeah. So we used ADO.net, no store procedures. Tried to keep the transactions pretty lightweight. But one of the processes that I described before was bringing back 1,000 transactions, yeah? We maxed it out of 1,000. So it was bringing back 1,000 transactions at any one point, which is a lot. So, you know, I think we started off by saying select 100 and then do that 5 or 6 times. And bring back 500, like a page, you know, how you can page through something. So we tried to simulate quite a real load. But obviously those sort of transactions might have taken 120 milliseconds, and some of the more lightweights might have taken 20 milliseconds. But we wanted an overall holistic view of what it's actually happening. We didn't use store procedures, so we kept it all in the application server. So it was actually quite a good result, personally. Anyone else? No reads and writes, yeah. So a complete plethora of stuff. So you can actually, back on that slide, I know it's busy, but it actually describes exactly what's going on there, yeah. So. There is caching built into our framework, yeah. There is some caching, yeah. So if it's already there, it's not going to go back and get it. So there was reads and writes. So when you write a transaction record, it's going to stamp the transaction record with an ID, with a GUID, and that's a write. And also when you transfer money, it's actually going to write the new account balance and all that sort of stuff. But obviously in some of the other processes, it already has you in memory, so it knows already what your account balance is. So it, you know, it doesn't see you as dirty at that point. And so there is some caching. We might have got away with it in that regard. But it was a pretty solid amount of database activity going on. Yeah, I believe you can, yeah, through SQL Azure. You can. I don't know if you can go as granular to the actual transactions. I don't know if you can do profile tracing, which would be a nice addition to SQL Azure, a profile trace. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure you can't do that. Yes, it is, yeah. But there wasn't a high degree of caching. I wanted to keep it as open as possible. I was trying to break Azure. Hey? Sorry, what was that? Yep. It was a sticky session. Well, am I connecting to a specific worker role? Yes, I am connecting to a specific worker role. It's called a sticky session. So every single payload that actually gets to and from inside the payload is a session handle, which actually tells me the port and IP address of the server I should go to. So if we go back to this architecture, so what happens is, you create the session on this, it creates a session on one of these app servers, and then that remains sticky, yeah? So and then from the web service, it goes straight to that app server. So it actually bypasses any site manager. So you're coming straight through. So you only got a single hop there. You've got to try and keep your hops to a minimum when you're doing service-to-service hopping. You don't want to have too many, you know, too many hops can cause too many problems. So you're trying to keep it at 2 and at most 3. Yep. Yeah. 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 No, that was basically I couldn't get any higher than 400, so why set it higher than 400? I put it 1,000. So I did one day. I thought I found it, but I don't know. There's stuff called chimney settings in WCF, so there's some weird things going on under the covers. And, you know, the more and more you get into it, you might find it, but, you know, I'd like to see something from Microsoft published to say if you want to go this high, you know, or You know, they may have put something inside Windows Azure that says I don't want any more than 400, because it's a pretty high number, 400 requests per second. So it might be something to do with threading or something to do with IIS. So that's why the .NET TCP binding might actually throw out some of those things. So if I start getting 1,000 requests per second, I know it's something to do with IIS then. So I've actually gone through about 300 of the profile like in the Cerebrata tool. I can connect to everyone. I've gone through everyone looking for 400. Where am I maxing? Where am I maxing? And I haven't found it yet. So, but 400 was fine for me because I managed to achieve my goal with only 10 instances. So it wasn't, you know, wasn't outrageous. I didn't actually sort of glossed over the slide, but because you can't see it very well. But what they were was these are our requests. So display actually we can go back to this one. Where is it? These are typically our transactions or our responses. Where's my laser? So these are typically our transactions. Yeah. So with multiple requests. Yeah. Yeah, a number of these, yeah. Which is better even still. So, you know, you're not just doing single lines and getting sub-40s. You're actually executing this and getting 40 milliseconds. So if you execute this one, it might only take 10 milliseconds. And to do just a lightweight read might take even less. I have seen numbers of 3 and 4 milliseconds coming back from Azure. So, you know, it's pretty good. If you keep everything on the same geographic location, you can get really good response times. Yep.
You said you're trying to break Azure, is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's... Yeah.
Who's behind you trying to break Azure? Presumably it's not Microsoft funding you guys.
No. I didn't really want to break Azure. I just wanted to see if I could, but... But it was, I just wanted to push it, yeah? So if I could only do 50 transactions a second and I was getting all timeouts all over the place, my error rates were through the roof, you know, I'd just be, this architecture is not very good, yeah? It might be a bit of a toy architecture, you know? Like, yeah, it's good for maybe just throwing up a couple of instances, but it's actually not. Seems like they've done a really good job. It's enterprise grade, yeah? So when I used to work for Macquarie, there was 100 milliseconds. That was our benchmark. We wanted 100 millisecond response times from web service database back again, yeah? And, you know, we're getting sub 40, even sub 20. If you reduce the amount, if you go to about 3,000, you probably get sub 20, 30 millisecond responses. So, yeah, which is just pretty powerful. Yeah. Anyone else? The which ones? The... Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you mean this site manager, this one box here? Oh, yeah. It's all about distributed architecture at one point. Yeah, you can throw your web service into a DMZ or something and front that. You know, you've got DOS attack prevention, you've got numerous benefits, so it's all about, yeah, could have done it a million ways. As anything with IT, you can do it 100 different ways, yeah? But, you know, this architecture is our architecture for our platform. We just want to prove it. Whether it's right or wrong is completely up for debate. We wanted to have this sort of architecture tested on Azure, so, and that was basically the long and short of it. I did deploy it in one zone. Yeah, the load testing, this section of it, were all deployed outside of the zone. So I needed to make sure I was testing the load balancer as well. So I needed to come out from other geographic locations. So I couldn't just exist in the same data center, or else my numbers would be skewed to some degree. So I needed to come out of the data center into some other location and actually test it there.
Is that
No, not the testing infrastructure. The testing infrastructure is something else, but you could definitely do that, yeah. And that would be another test we would have to do. If we looked at maybe having, different application servers in different zones, we would then need to orchestrate another test to see how that performed. But you can do that with Azure, yeah? So there's no reason why you can't. You can create affinity zones and put various different things into it, and you can do it with both the database and the worker roles and web roles. So I kept the content fairly short because I thought there'd be quite a lot of questions. So it sounds like we've done that. So it, I guess that's it. Thanks. Yeah, sure. do you want to come? You can come and see me. Right? Yeah. All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So the slides will be on the site at some point.
Yeah. I believe every site is going up. Yeah. Thanks, mate. Cheers.